Okay, good morning, everyone. So, Rav Volbi, the author of our volume, Ali Shur, introduces us today to a story. And this story appears in the Talmud, in a tractate called Nedarim, Maseches Nedarim, which it happens to be what the Kollel is studying this year, so I have actually spent some time thinking about this story. But I never thought about this story in the way that Rav Volbi presents it. And it is a story that can teach us on multiple levels about ourselves and our connection to Hashem and how we go through life. And I think that we could spend a lot of time, but the image that you're going to see here of a person looking into a pool of water and seeing their own reflection is a very powerful image. It's a powerful image because I'm not sure if the Gemara meant this image or if Rav Volbi meant this image, but this image is at the heart of a lot of what we're talking about, which is self-reflection. You know, how do we see ourselves? And if we see ourselves, we think about ourselves, then we can grow. So I think at least the first piece of this is going to have to do with that issue. So it's not to me, it's not coincidental that the story is about someone who saw their own reflection. And that's something that is hard to do sometimes. What we see when we see our own reflection is not always what we want to see. So the Gemara tells the following story. Here we are. If you're looking in the sheets, it's on the page that says Perek Shloshasar, the 13th chapter, Harbakasha Beguf. Omar Shimon HaTzadik. Shimon HaTzadik told the following story. Miyamai, from my days, Lo Achalti Asham Nazir Tamei, Ela Echad. I only ate the sacrifice of a Nazir who became Tamei one time. So what does he mean by that? You know that in the time of it could be true today, but I wouldn't recommend it for various reasons. The Torah describes, and this was was apparently something that people did in the times of the Beis HaMikdash, people accepted upon themselves, men or women, a period of nizirus, becoming a nazir, which means that a person would not drink any wine, wouldn't go into a cemetery, become tamei lameis. So this is a whole question in and of itself, whether that's something that's a worthy pursuit or not a worthy pursuit. But Shimon HaTzadik said, you know, when a nazir concludes his nazirus, when he concludes that period of time that he's separated from various worldly things, he has to offer a sacrifice. And that's also true, although it's a different sacrifice, if the nazir breaks his nazirus. Even if it was completely unintentional. You know, somebody was walking down the street, downtown, and a corpse fell out of a window and dropped on you. Totally unexpected, right? That's not something you would see every day. So it would happen to me, a big problem, because I'm a Kohen, and if it happened to a Nazir, it would also be a big problem. So then the Nazir has to show up to the Beis HaMikdash, she has to tell him, you know, I have to bring a sequence of Karbonos, because yesterday downtown a corpse fell out the window and fell on me. So when that happens, so there's a very specific procedure of sacrifices that you have to bring. So there's the procedure that you have to bring if you finish your Nazirus correctly, and then there's the procedure that you have to bring if you finish your Nazirus incorrectly. And by the way, it could be a worthy cause if, God forbid, somebody passed by a Meis Mitzvah, an unattended deceased person. So they could be the Nazir, they could be the Kohen Gadol, I don't care who you are. You have to take care of that person's Kavod Abrios, you have to bury that person, even if it means you have to start your Nazirus from scratch. But Shimon HaTzadik said, you know, there are a lot of people who brought Karbonos because they took upon themselves the Nazirus, but I never ate any of them except for one person. So what's the story? So it's obviously there's something very special about this person. There's something very significant. That Shimon HaTzadik, who was a long-standing Kohen, says, I never ate anybody's. There's something that he thought was either insincere about their commitment, and therefore he thought their karbonos, you know, there's different discussions and explanations why he thought there was something lacking about their sacrifice. But he says, I don't want to eat that, except for one guy. Pamachas, one time, second line, Ba Adam Echad Nazir Min Hadarom. One man came who was a Nazir from the south. Viraisiv, and I saw him. Shehu yefe einayim v'tov roi. He was good looking. He had beautiful eyes. Ukvutzosav seduros lo taltalam. He had braids and heaps and curls and locks of hair. So this is an indication that this person was a Nazir, because one of the main restrictions of a Nazir is that a Nazir is not permitted to cut their hair. Thanks. Amartilo, I said to him, said Shimon HaTzadik, Bini, my son, Ma ra'isa lahashchis se'archa zehana'a. Because, you know, first you have to let your hair grow as a Nazir. And then, through the process of stepping away from Nazirus, in addition to sacrifices, you also have to cut all of your hair. You have to shave all of your hair completely. It's called Giluach. So Shimon HaTzadik says to this man, you have very good-looking hair. You're a good-looking guy. Why would you take upon yourself a Nazirus? And now, you know what you're going to look like when you get home. You're going to look in the mirror. When you get in the car, you're going to be startled. I don't understand. Omar Lee said to me, fourth line, Ro'e ha'yisi la'aba be'iri. I was a shepherd for my father in my city. V'tarachti, and I worked hard, middle of the fourth line, l'malos mayim min hamayon, to fill water from the well. And when I went to the well, v'nisakalti be'bavua shali. I looked into the well and I saw, bavua means my image. I saw my image in the water. Upachaz olai yitzri. My yetzer hara, my evil inclination, grasped hold of me at that moment when I saw myself. Skip the parentheses. Ubikesh litordeini min ha'olam. That impulse, it sought to destroy me from the world. It was going to ruin my life. Amartilo, I said to him, who is he talking to? His image, himself. He says, I said to that good-looking guy in the mirror, I said to him, Russia, wicked person, lama ata mizgoe ba'olam she'eino shalcha. Why are you becoming haughty? Why are you aggrandizing in a world that's not yours? You think you're so good looking? Bemishu asad lios rima visolea. Have you ever been to a cemetery? Do you know exactly where that good looks is going to go? Ho'avoda, I promise to the service, she'al galechacha lashamayim, that I will cut you off, I will shave my hair, I will cut my hair for the sake of heaven. That's the story of this guy, the Nazir, who came from the south. And Shimon HaTzadik, this great Kohen, he said, Miyad, immediately, Amarati, I stood up, Unishaktiv al Rosho, I kissed him on his head, Amarti lo bini, Kamocha, Yirbu Nozrei Nizirus b'Yisrael. Like you, there should be Nazirim in the Jewish people. Alecha, Alecha HaKasav Omer, about you, the Torah says, Ish, a person, Kiyafli lindor neder nazir lahazir l'Hashem. A person will take an oath to become a nazir to Hashem. That's the story. Kohen Gadol doesn't eat from anybody except for this one. And this story is a guy who grabbed a hold of himself and took upon himself nazirus. So what's so special about this? What's so unusual about this particular Nazir that Shimon HaTzadik says, you're the only one who I'm going to eat from. You're the only model of Nazirus that follows in the path that the Torah outlined in the Pasuk. What's so special about it? So skip the first line for a second, because as we mentioned before, part of the reason why Shimon HaTzadik didn't want to eat from other people could be because he thought that other people were insincere, they weren't correctly motivated, or because in general, he didn't like the idea of Nazirus, which is part of a bigger discussion, not for today, that a person who he lives such an ascetic lifestyle that they don't even drink wine, they can't even recite proper Kiddush. So the Gemara says that we're not so excited about that as a general rule of thumb. That's a very extreme method. And the Rambam says it's a good thing to do in a case where you need a corrective measure. So you have someone like this who is going to go down the wrong path, so he does a corrective measure by accepting upon himself this kind of extreme measure. But in general, Nazirus, which belongs to the world of Hafla, of taking upon ourselves oaths, oaths are not a very popular practice in the world of Chazal and the rabbis in the Talmud and Maseches Nedarim in a few places. They're not so into the idea of oaths. It's enough what the Torah said is prohibited. You don't have to add anything else. But look in the second paragraph. Dovar gadol haya b'nazir zeh. There was something great about this nazir. V'davar gadol gila Shimon HaTzadik b'zeh. And there was something great that Shimon HaTzadik understood from this. What's that? Ha'his orus harishona shel tuma ba'adam hi hargasha beguf. The first desire, the first impetus, the first motivation of tumah, of something negative in our lives, is a sense of something in our guf, in our body. And therefore he says, Hatzarahu, this young man, nistaka b'tzel shalo, saw his own image, v'rashu noe, he saw he was good looking, v'tekav hirgish kipachas olav yitzro, he felt that the yitzro was grasping onto him. And therefore, v'chi yitzer zeh, and this evil and inclination, shenis orbo, that was moved within him, yivieu lidei maisim roim, will lead him to bad things. V'tekev chipes umatza eitz anegdo. And then he found an immediate solution. Kibel al atzmo naziris. Why? Because shebesof yumei nazirus, so at the conclusion of his nazirus, yitztarech legaleach kol se'oro v'lisro v'osam la'shamayim. So I think this paragraph we can unpack in two different pieces. The first piece is Rav Olbi's observation that what got him recognizing this in the first place, you know, before we talk about seeing himself in the mirror, it was this hisorus of tuma which came from Hargasha Baguf. Now on a simple level, Rav Olbi is speaking to young, mostly single yeshiva boys. And well, based on what we see in society today, this would be a very good apt discussion in a more broader context. But Rav Olbi is pointing out that a person has to understand, especially young men, that they could get themselves into a whole heap of trouble if they don't have themselves in check in terms of their own hormones and their own focus and their own desires and what they're up to. So he says that's the first thing. But I think there's a deeper idea here, perhaps, of what he's alluding to, of what the Nazir saw. I'll give you a mashal of this story, pretty much the same story in a modern context, you could say. So I was once blessed. I've been blessed many things and many times in my life. So one of the unique opportunities that I once had was that when I was finishing the smicha program, so I was asked to deliver a few words at the Chag HaSmicha, which is kind of like the ordination celebration that happens every couple of years in Reitz. So it was a very special occasion. My parents were there, my grandmother was there, 1,100 other people were there, all of my rabbeim were there, so it was a big deal. So as some of you know, I had a teacher, Nishmas Aiden, should rest in peace, his name is Gerald August. Gerald was my speech coach for years. So Gerald taught me everything about speaking. So I knew that I was going to speak in Lamport Auditorium, which is that's a big place in YU. They have 1,100 seats. They have 900 seats on the main floor, and they have 200 seats in the balcony. So I asked Gerald Oliver Shalom if he would come with me the Friday before the Chag HaSmicha and prepare, and we could work on eye contact, because how do you make eye contact with 1,100 people? So he came, and the whole room was decked out, and I stood at the podium. It was me and Gerald, and like a janitor was walking through, and he stood at different places in the room practicing eye contact. And then at one point, he came up to the podium and he showed me that on the floor, let's say this is the podium, behind me all the Rosh Yeshiva sat in rows. At that time, the late Gaon Rav Lichtenstein, Zechet Tzadik V'Kadosh Levracha, and other Rosh Yeshiva were still living, and now some of them are not. So they were sitting behind me when I was speaking, and so that they could see whoever was speaking, it's a very long story, it's like a 3-hour ceremony, a lot of speeches, there were screens on the floor that were facing this way. So Gerald said to me one simple line, which is so true. He said, when you're speaking, don't look at the screen. It's very distracting. And that is the marshal for life. If you are looking at the screen, you're going to get very distracted. The first thing I wonder, if which is what is beneath this idea of the hisorus of tumah that Rav Volbi is alluding to, it's not just that a person who gets who becomes obsessed with looking at images, whether they're on a screen or on a phone, or you know, that's going to get them into a lot of trouble. But it's the problem is that when a person starts looking at themselves, becoming obsessed with themselves, that's where the Yetzer Hara really starts to bite. It's whenever we step back and we realize, you know, we go through life and we're only looking at ourselves. And so the way that we view every interaction with everybody else, it's all about me, and I'm in the center and I'm the focus of the attention. So then that is the shorish of the Yetzer Hara. How would you define the Yetzer Hara? Right? Rav Volbi is talking here about Yetzer Hara. So there are different ways to define the Yetzer Hara, the evil inclination. But one interesting way of thinking about it is that there is a tradition, appears in a Midrashic, a Mishnaic text called the Avos Reb Nosson, which is a parallel to Pirkei Avos, where the Avos Reb Nosson points out, you know, that the Yetzer Hara, the evil inclination, comes to a person when they are born. Yetzer Lev Ha'adam Ra Min Urav. And when do you pick up your Yetzer Tov? You pick up your Yetzer Tov when you become Bas Mitzvah or Bar Mitzvah. So I just thought that was a little bit unfair. What kind of a thing is that? Your Yetzer Hara gets a 12-year head start until you become Bat Mitzvah? Then, like, what does that mean? So what that Avos Reb Nosson may be telling us is that it's not about having those two little Disney figures with the white halo and the red pitchfork on either shoulder. It's saying that children have one very distinct trait that they are given as an inborn quality of nature. And that is, they are self-absorbed in the moment. When a child is born, it says, hold me, feed me, change me, pick me up, put me down. It's all about me. And it's all about the moment. Right now, this is going to make me feel good. This is what I want. You know, yesterday, we had the privilege of being at my nephew's bar mitzvah. There was an inordinate amount of candy at this bar mitzvah. So I'm not going to say which of my children or how many of them were just parked at that table. And if I said to them, you know that when we get on the plane, you're going to be complaining that your stomach is hurting. But it doesn't help, because right now it's just, give me candy. You know? But it doesn't matter that in a half hour you're going to be so nauseous. No, it's right now. I want it right now, because it's all about what's going to make me feel good right now. So the Yetzer Hara is about this very self-absorbed, instant, immediate, what is in it for me right here and right now. It doesn't matter what's going to be later on. So thankfully, as a child gets older, it's not that the Ribbono Shel Olam gave us a rat race. It means he gave us the opportunity and the challenge, especially for those of us who have children at home, to try to help them grow out of this and to understand, number one, there are people around you. That's why for young kids, sharing is such a big problem. Sharing is such a headache, because no kid wants to share, because it's all about me. But as you get older, you know, you start to recognize that you have to share and that there are consequences to your actions. Well, you know, if you share today, tomorrow when you go to their house, they'll share with you. Happens to be that there are many people who we know who are not six, but they're 60 or 65 or 80 who still haven't learned to share and who still haven't learned the consequences of their actions. You know, sometimes I'll sit down and a couple will just give me that look like, are you sure you want to eat that? You know, am I thinking about the consequences of my actions? The idea that Rav Volbi is uncovering for us in this story starts with the self-reflection, right? It starts with the guy has been going through his life, but he never actually looked in the mirror. He never reflected on himself. This is not necessarily the pshat in the story, but this is maybe one way to understand it. This shepherd is going through life, and he has every justification for every action that he does. You know, we all do. We all justify. We can justify from today till tomorrow. How we speak to people and what we do and what we eat and how we act. Everything. We justify it all. But how often do we stop and take a mirror to ourselves? So this man finally stops and takes a mirror to himself, and he realizes that, you know what his greatest Yetzer Hara is? His greatest Yetzer Hara is of being self-absorbed. He's Pachas Olav Yitzro. So he has first the step of self-awareness. He recognizes where he's up to, and that recognition enables him to identify where the challenge is going to be. And then he actually has some follow-through. Now I can understand why Shimon HaTzadik says this guy is a model. He's a model for religious growth. Because he takes the time to introspect, he recognizes what the issue is, and he executes on some kind of solution. He becomes a Nazir. So he says, I'm going to eat from that. That's what Rav Volbi writes in the next paragraph. Vitzoyer, and this young person, Shehirgish Bechol Ze Berega Rishon, who sensed this all in the first moment, I'm in the paragraph 3 from the bottom. V'lo'od Ela Shigar B'Yitzro, he named, as Dr. Pelkovitz would say, he named the monster, Gar B'Yitzro, he called it out, and he said, HaMizgoy Al Olam She'enu Shalo, that you're bragging about a world that's not yours, that's fleeting. You know, how often do we name that monster? Are we honest with ourselves about that thing which is holding us back? Holding us back between us and ourselves? Holding us back between us and HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Holding us back between us and other people? How often do we name that monster? V'lo'od ela sha'amar al ha'emes ha'gedola. He recognized the great truth. Shahaguf nitan lo kekelila avodas Hashem velola hana atzmis. This goes back to the more basic level that he recognized that his body was given to him for the service of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, not to for instant gratification. Lachem kibla atzmo nazirus. He recognized what he needed to do, and he was mekabel the nazirus. And what's amazing is about this story. It's also, I don't know how many people here ever watch basketball or play basketball, but one of the great chachmas in basketball, I'm not such a big basketball maven, but this far at least I know, is not so much the ball movement. You know, there are five men on the court, or women, and there's the point guard, the person brings down the ball, and then they're going to have some ball movement, they'll run an offense, whatever the play is going to be. But the chap in real quality basketball is not the movement with the ball. It's not how the guy dribbles the ball and moves with the ball. It's moving without the ball. Right? The whole lumdus of basketball plays, you ever see at the end of the game, they huddle around the coach and the coach draws up a play. But you could ask yourself, why is he drawing a play for four guys who don't hold the ball? They're not touching the ball. The answer is, if you want to score in basketball, you don't need to move with the ball. You need to move without the ball. You need to put yourself in position. You need to set a screen so that the other guy can come around, and when he finds that open spot, he'll be ready to shoot the ball, and then you pass it to him. But if nobody moves without the ball, so then they're all going to be standing around, and the defenders are all going to be there. The whole greatness of basketball coaching is the movement without the ball. What this Nazir figured out, and what Rav Volbi says is quite remarkable, is that he understood, you know what, I'm not going to wait until I get into a whole sticky situation to start making changes. Right? I'm not going to wait until it becomes a problem. He didn't say, I'm going to go home and shave my hair tomorrow. He says, no, I'm going to enter a program. I'm going to be committed to a program that's going to lead me in a path that will take me in a good direction. Ultimately, it will mean I'll cut off all my hair and then I'll start again. But I can't just wait until I get into a situation. Right? This guy doesn't say, oh, you know what? I should really be careful. The next time I go down to a club, when I walk by and I had a half a minute to go inside, I shouldn't go. He's saying, no, I'm going to move without the ball. I'm going to make a strategy before that person who always annoys me comes to my house on Shabbos afternoon. I'm going to think of the strategy before how I'm going to handle that situation and not wait until I get in the thick of it and then I said something nasty or I did something that I'm going to regret later on. This Nazir is moving without the ball. This Nazir is thinking ahead of time to say, I have this realization that this is going to be a problem for me. whether it's on the surface level that it's a taiva, desire type of potential problem, or it's on the deeper level, it's a self-absorption problem. He says, I got to deal with it now. And dealing with it now means, number one, not putting it off. But number two, it means moving without the ball. It means dealing with it in a way that you avoid the situation in the first place.
Fence far from the edge, so that if your Yitzhahara convinces you to jump over the fence, you're still far away enough from the cliff that you have time. You know that you're preempting the fall.
Right.
As you're speaking, I'm thinking about something that I know I'm struggling with now that I bring up, because I think a lot of people in this room probably are too, that our kids who are, at least mine, who are entering the adulthood phase right now, we're 11, 12, and 13, are struggling with social media, which is all about self-absorption. It's all about me. And they're going from being kids who think all about me to where they're supposed to be making that transition to being more selfless, or actually becoming, you know, potentially dragged into the social media, which is even more so all about me. It's posting pictures of me or my friends or me or what they're doing or where I'm going, and it's a huge, huge struggle. I mean, personally, I know I'm going through this because I'm trying to teach my children it's not all about me in this world, and that's why you may not post anything about yourself. You may not be on social media, and it's we're trying to put that fence up around our children to protect them. But it's really an uphill battle because our world and our culture is teaching them just the opposite.
I would agree with you, and I think it's true for social media, which is what Jenny is focusing on most specifically, but it's true in general in American society. Who's in the center of every decision-making process? I'm in the center. That's why, number one, there have to be so many choices, because you have to cater to the individual me's, right? You know, certain people rue the fact that in certain places, you know, there are, you know, 10, 15 minyanim, because you have to have the minyan that caters to me. It's, you know, it's all about what's my style and my age group and my friends, and, you know, we all have to have the same, you know, it's all about me. Someone goes to, even in the medical community, you know, you'll find autonomy as a driving force in decision-making in medicine, which to me is, you know, mind-boggling. But that's really the challenge. That's really the challenge, is identifying and helping ourselves identify and our kids identify.
They don't even stand a chance.
Where is it?
It's human nature, but now it's beyond human nature. Now the culture is taking it.
Right. So I guess there are two ways to go about this. There are two ways to go about this. And maybe we'll leave more for next time. We'll finish with this. Dr. Belkovitz has two ways of looking at this, and there are different strokes for different folks. There is isolation and there's inoculation. Right, one way to deal with this is to say, you know, we're going to shut ourselves out from society as a whole, because essentially it is such a pernicious trend and it's so pervasive. You can't get away from this. You can't. It's impossible unless you completely wall yourself away. And the other is inoculation. You know, and it's true, some people don't like inoculation. I'm not endorsing not vaccine. You have to vaccinate. But some people don't like the concept of a vaccination because it introduces a little bit of the strain of that virus, which could be a dangerous thing. And depending on what context you're in and dealing with the person that you have, you know, trying to explain to my kids who are listening on the radio about a legalized recreational marijuana in California. So trying to explain to them how to make sense of that. So inoculation says, you know, we engage in conversations and recognize and talk about where are we seeing these kinds of phenomena and what do we think about them and why. What does the Ribbono Shel Olam expect from us in this situation? Right? Now, I don't think that the answer is to say, you know, you're going to turn up the fire in Gehenna, you know, from 375 to 450. I don't think that's necessarily the way to address it. I think thinking about it more of a conversation to say, let's identify, what do you think, it goes back to the same, the Yetzer Hara piece, what do you think is going to be the consequence of that behavior? And by the way, we like to talk about it for our kids, but it's so true for us also. If we took a step back and we said, what is going to be the consequence of sending that email right now or waiting 12 hours until you don't have smoke coming out of your nose, you know, before you send that text or that email? You know, that comes because it's going to make me feel good right now to put them in their place and tell them exactly what I think they should be doing or where they should go. So it's true for all of us. We say, okay, wait a second. Let's talk about this particular phenomenon, you know, whether it's social media or how we interact with people or, you know, what kind of decisions we're making or what we're hearing on the radio. And we say, wait a second, what does the Rebbe Shlomo expect from us in this circumstance? You know, what are the real consequences of this? What does it say about us as people? And what do we want for ourselves? And we can make a choice. And sometimes we'll make mistakes. But all in all, hopefully we'll keep that conversation about the Rebbe Shlomo in the middle, you know, in the middle of our focus, and that will bring us closer to him, not farther. That's the hope. But this is the idea of looking in the mirror and really thinking about ourselves. Have a great week. Yashikoach.